For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
The Parsha, Miketz. Okay? I'll stop. Miketz chapter 41, verse 1. Our story picks up with, right, as we know, Yosef was framed by Mrs. Potiphar, right? Right, she tried to seduce him, and he ends up spending 10 years in jail, and then another 2 years, 12 years in jail. And by the way, the Midrash brings down that she didn't stop, that even in jail she tried to seduce him day in and day out, and so he was still under tremendous trials and tribulation. At the end of this additional 2 years that he got in jail, a total of 12, it says that Paro had a dream, right? And, you know, this famous dream, two of them, about seven fat cows and seven thin cows. Thin cows consume the fat cows. And then we have seven wheat sheets, bundles of wheat, if you will. The thin ones swallow up the fat ones. No one can interpret it, right? And finally, they call Yosef. He's raced out of the pit, and he interprets the dream as being 7 years of famine, right? 7 years of famine, which follows 7 years of great abundance. And he gives an advice to Paro that, you know, during 7 years of abundance, obviously you should store it up for the 7 years of famine. Paro appoints him viceroy, second in command of all of Egypt. And we'll talk about why that was such an amazing thing. Okay, and soon after that, he's given a wife. And this wife is an adopted daughter, ends up being the daughter of Dinah. Right, so he marries back into his family. And that completes his cycle with Leah. Because you remember, we talked about he was switched in the womb. Leah prayed to have, right, you remember this? Leah was pregnant with Yosef. And she prayed that they switch rooms with Rachel, so Rachel would at least have two tribes. Can't go into it now. Look at take number 17. Okay, so at that time, after he marries her, he goes out to the land, and they have granaries, and they start storing the food. In the meantime, back in the land of Canaan, Yaakov and his family are also feeling the famine, not as much as everybody else, but not to avoid a jealous eye. Yaakov sends his sons up to get food. Yosef immediately recognizes them. They do not recognize him, okay? Which is symbolic, because he recognized them as brothers when they did not recognize him as a brother and sold them. And he accuses them of being spies. And by the way, why does he accuse them of being spies? Because the brothers had come up, they had a suspicion that he was probably in Egypt, and they came up, it says, as brothers of Yosef. In other words, they regretted their act. They were going to redeem him no matter what it cost. And therefore, Yosef was afraid that they would ask around. And eventually, they would find out that he, this guy, you know, this viceroy is Yosef. So he accused them of being spies. And of course, if you're accused of being spies, that's going to stop you in your tracks from asking questions, because that will only confirm the fact that you are spies. So that was Yosef's cheshbon in that. Okay. In the meantime, he accuses him of being spies, he puts him in jail for 3 days, releases him, and he keeps Shimon, and he tells him, you know, if everything you're saying is right, and I'll believe you that you're not spies, this one other brother that you mentioned, who ends up being Benjamin, you bring him up. You bring him up, then I'll believe everything else you're saying. Now, we know Benjamin is the only other son, and as far as Yaakov may think, the only surviving son of Rachel. And we all know what Rachel meant to him. Right? She has two sons, Yosef and Benjamin. So this is the test. Yosef is not interested in torturing his brothers. He cries. He is overwhelmed by grief, but he holds himself in for two major reasons. Number one, he realizes the dream is not just a dream. His dream is a nevuah. It is a prophecy. And again, the rule is, like with miracles, you're not allowed to sit back. and let you have to do everything possible to make that prophecy come true. Number one. Number two, it would do no good to reveal himself if the brothers have not rectified on their high level, for Shtesach, on their high level, the jealousy and internal strife. Do they hate all of Rachel's children? I'm going to put them in a situation, which climaxes next week, where they, again, Benjamin, they'll have a chance to sell as a slave, so to speak, right? Will they leave them there and they can all go home, or will there be some self-sacrificing? And of course, next week's parsha tells us that Yehuda, the leader, is willing to go instead of Benjamin, and all the brothers refuse to leave if Benjamin's not going to go with them. And that is the final rectification. Their tshuva process is complete. They have fully repented. The complete self-sacrificing of themselves as slaves instead of Benjamin is the tshuva of selling Yosef as a slave. Therefore, now I can reveal myself to you because there's perfect unity in the family. Okay, that is basically the storyline. We'll go back at some highlights. Questions. One question. The question that all the Forshim, all the commentaries grapple with. How can Yosef let his father suffer? Well, one of the answers that we came up with last year could be. There's many reasons. Again, this prophecy, a prophecy has to be fulfilled, what a dream is and everything. But Yosef understood what Yaakov Avinu was all about, his father Yaakov was about. If he had informed him that he was alive, number one, what first I'm telling you is by the commentaries, and that is, could it be that Yaakov would have cursed the children, the other sons? Now, Yaakov inadvertently cursed Rachel. You know, Laban was looking for his idols. He said, whoever you find your idol with will be dead. And he certainly didn't think Rachel stole him, and he certainly did not wish that on her, and it still happened. Rachel died through that curse, because Yaakov was a very powerful man. He was a tzaddik. His words hold weight. How much more so if he issued a curse and meant it? Yosef wanted to show that everything was rectified, everything was from Shemayim, everything was from heaven. And we're going to see this throughout the parsha. He keeps repeating this. You meant for me bad, but God meant it for good. Right? This is all orchestrating by God's hands. No, you know, can't point fingers at anybody here. Okay, so that's one answer. Another answer is, he understood as much as it grieved Yaakov that Yosef, might be dead, there's only one thing that would grieve him more. To know there's internal strife in not just his sons, those are the 12 tribes of Israel. And until he could show that everybody is at peace and harmony and brotherhood, he knew that was more important to Yaakov than realizing that Yosef was alive and well. Because this exile is, again, the paradigm of all exiles and redemptions of Egypt, right, is for the future. The paradigm, everything, the future exile and redemption of Egypt is exactly what we're going through now. It was because of sinas chinam, causes hatred on their level. Okay? That is why we are in our exile today. The first temple was destroyed because of the three cardinal sins, right? Idol worshiping, murder, right? And immorality, right? That was an exile of 70 years. This exile, which is over 1920 years, is because of causeless hatred. Right? That's why we're so concerned about Lashon Hara in this generation. We understand what that can do. Therefore, right, Yosef realized that Yaakov Avinu is more concerned not only about this exile and this family, but this is a paradigm. Remember, Maase Avos Simon Labonim. This is the paradigm. This is the binyanav for the future redemption. We got to make sure the rectification, and there is an avas chinam, a love for no reason, to the same degree of this sinas chinam, a hate for no reason, right? The whole totality and destiny of the world is at stake here, of all spirituality, of the nation of Israel, of the times of the ultimate redemption. Mashiach is at stake here. And Yosef understood that. Therefore, my father would agree with me. We better keep him in the dark. Unfortunately, He would rather grieve and not know that I'm alive and well, but first have this rectification for this redemption and the final redemption, that everything is in Ahava, brotherhood and unity. Okay. First of all, there's a lot of strategy going on here, that we learn a lot of lessons from this story. So it's interesting, also some interesting side knowledge of certain sciences they knew back then that we're only coming to know now. For example, every city stored granaries. Now, we're backing up here, guys. We're going back to the 7 years of harvest, of a tremendous abundance, so they're going to store it. So Yosef did something very smart. He stored granaries in every city for two reasons. There's an expression called pas basalo. It means bread in the basket. It means if you can look at your granary and see plenty of bread there, plenty of food, it makes you satisfied, right? It's a known fact that people that, whatever, during a famine, they tend to eat more because, like, you know, they don't know where the next meal is going to come from. So that was one brilliant thing Yosef did. He stored granaries in each city so they would have the confidence to know, you know, there's enough food. And also would encourage them to gather during these 7 years because they realize they're gathering for themselves. Okay, that's one thing he did. The other thing, of course, just on another practical sense, is it saved tremendous on transportation charges if he gathered everything to where he was under central control. Interesting, Rashi brings down here that every land, every geographical area can act like the dirt, acts as a preservative for its fruit. If you put in the wheat some of the dirt of that place, mami desatvua, from rotting, it will keep the fruit, the grain from rotting. Very interesting. By putting dirt from that same place. In other words, you put dirt from a different place, and so it won't work. It's very interesting. That's a Rashi. Look it up. This dream that Paul has, it says that the seven thin cows ate the seven fat cows, right? And then when Yosef interprets this, he talks about 7 years of abundance, but the seven famine years will be so bad that it says, you will forget. Shnei Rav Achareim V'Nishkach Kol HaSava, chapter 41, verse 30. Right, the years of famine will be so great that you will forget about all the years of plenty. Symbolically, this has a lot to do with our personal lives. Anytime we have plenty and things are going well with us, we forget all about that when we have the slightest little hangnail. We forget about all the years of abundance in our kosher. We have a lot of complaints to Hashem when things are going bad. We forget about all the years He took care of us and all the times that things went well. Okay. And the other interesting thing here is that we look at things completely backwards. Just in case you were wondering. Vayehi miketz shasayim yamim. It was at the end of 2 years. Uparo chaylem. And Paro is dreaming. Or Chaim said that Paro had the same dream continuously for 2 years, but he woke up, didn't remember it. Now he remembered it. So, we always look at this story as what? Well, we think that, you know, Paro had a dream, and therefore that was the instrument that Yosef got out of jail and became viceroy, right? Because he had a dream, no one can interpret it, Yosef came and interpreted it, right? No. Wrong. Or Gedolyahu tells us, no, that we're mixing up the cause and effect. It came time for the redemption of Yosef. Therefore, Paro had a dream. You understand? That's why he had a dream and remembered it this time. Okay? Also, again, Amase Avos Simon Laboni, right? Again, the actions of our forefathers portraying certain things in the future that are going to happen. What happens? All of a sudden, he's languishing in jail, Yosef. And what do we have happen? It says, you know, I know this guy. The butler says, I know this guy. Yosef, he can interpret dreams, right? So what happens? It says, Vayiritzu min habor. All of a sudden they go to Yosef and they race him out of the pit. Chapter 41, verse 14. He's raced out of the pit. And in a moment, he's standing before Paro. From the pit, right? To standing in front of Paro, to interpreting the dreams, and being viceroy. All within like that. So, this is, again, Amasi Avos. First, what happened in Egypt, we were sitting there in slavery for so many years, and all of a sudden, you know, boom, in the middle of the night, that's it. We're out of there. Because the time had come, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu is not going to keep us there one moment longer. Whatever we needed, whatever rectification Yosef needed, whatever rectification we needed as a people in Egypt, when the time came, we were out of there. And so, too, Yemei HaMashiach. It says, the expression that Chazal used, Yoshua Hashem Keheref Ayin. The salvation of Hashem comes in the blink of an eye. Right? And it says, you know, well, it could look disastrous. And by the way, this is a hint to Purim. Why Purim is the most significant holiday for us. It is mamish, a zer anpin, a microcosm, a miniature Yemei HaMashiach. Right? Where everything, nahafahu, turned around. It looked like we were going to be destroyed. We destroyed our enemies. It looked like it would be a day of complete mourning. It turned out to be a great day of greatest simcha. Because the salvation of Hashem came in the blink of an eye. It's exactly what's going to happen to Yemei HaMashiach. So too with every one of us. We're all going through. I don't know anybody in this room or any other room that doesn't have their little peccal of problems. Whether it be physical or mental or emotional, whatever it is. Okay? Know that for whatever reasons we have to go through what we have to go through. We don't know why. Okay? But Hashem will rescue us. We always have, when you know, it'll be so much, and then the salvation of Hashem will come through each one of our personal traumas that we're going through. The salvation will come. It is a test. It is a test. A test of faith, of imunah, and bitachon in Hashem. You know, this is a tremendous thing. I know it seems terrible. You don't think you can go on anymore. And by the way, my Rebbe, Rabbi Katz, to say, if you feel you can't go on, that's it. I've had it. Hang on. That means it's over. By definition, it means it's almost over. It's a test of faith. And you're going to look back and you're going to see that during those hard times, you grew more, right? And you built yourself up spiritually more than the tranquil times. Those will be the best times. You got a stronger connection to God through it. Okay? Until then, it's very hard to see that. So you just have to hang tight, you know, and have faith. Yeshua Hashem Krefine, everybody's personal traumas should be over immediately. But until then, hang tight. No, the salvation comes in the blink of an eye, overnight, in a moment. It could be all over. Everything can turn around. And go from Yagon to Sim. The bottom line is, this whole life, you know, and I'll also tell you this, this whole life is a test. This whole life is a minefield. That's what it is. It says this in the books of Musar. Whole life is a test. Everybody just has a different test. You know this story. Everybody has a little peckle of problem. We all came here and put it on the table. You know what they say. You had a chance to take anybody's peckle. You'd end up picking up your own peckle. Right. What is it? Okay. Moving on. another bit of Exodus in a microcosm. Chapter 41, verse 57. V'kola aretz ba'o Mitzrayim. There's a famine, worldwide famine. They all came to get food from Yosef. V'kol kesef v'zav sheba'olam lakat Yosef. And all the gold and silver of the world Yosef gathered. This is from the Gemara and Pesachim. And it is this gold and silver that we take out about 210 years later, a little more than that, right? About 210 years later, we take out the Rechush Gadol, that great wealth. And Yosef brings it all in, okay? And it's hinted to also when he tells the brothers when he returns their money back in their sack, so they bring it back to him. And he says to him, you know, that money is yours. Keep it. It's like a hint that eventually we're going to take it out. It's also a hint in the future, again, these three themes, what Yosef goes through, what we go through in the Exodus and the ultimate redemption, right? That in the ultimate redemption, will all the money will be returned to us that was stolen from us throughout all the goals. Chapter 42, verse 1. Lama Tisro, why do you guys look at each other, says Yaakov to his sons. It's true, we don't need food right now, but you're causing jealousy. You know, Esav, Yishmael, the goyim, it's causing jealousy. Go up there, pretend you need food. Okay, they learn from here, Gemara and Tinus learns from here that if you have it well, and you know, during a bad time, a famine, whatever it is, don't flaunt your wealth or whatever it is that you have, and they don't, because that just arouses the jealousy of the goyim. See, Esav has a long memory. He still has gotten in his mind that we stole his brachas. I'm telling you, subconsciously, it's there. Okay? And we stole the materialistic brachas. So every time there's a rich Jew, that's what they say, the rich Jew. So we are supposed to be very modest materialistically. And many a pogrom has been started because we haven't been, by the way. Okay, chapter 42, verse 2. Yaakov Avinu says, Radu Shama, go down to Egypt. It's a hint, Radu. Numerical value of Radu, which means to go down, is 210. 210 years that will be in Egypt. That is a Rashi. Okay, now, this thing about the dreams, I want to touch upon it. Yaakov insisted on telling his dreams over to his brothers. If he knew his brothers had a problem with jealousy or hatred, or stasach again, on their level, why did he tell it to them? So we said last week he told it to them because he wanted them to see that this is min shamayim. This is from heaven it was decreed that he would have be a king. There's more to it. Our dreams today are dribble. But back then, there used to be people who knew how to dream. They didn't just dream, they dreamt. You know, they had a dream. No, their dream, you know, it says, the Gemara says that a dream is a 60th of prophecy. The problem is it gets mixed up with a bunch of symbols. It says there's no such thing as a dream, even these type of dreams, that doesn't have some straw, doesn't have something that's irrelevant. Of course, with us, it's just the opposite. We have mostly straw, and there's something that is relevant there. Okay, so the rule is the following, some of this applies to today, but they say basically our dreams are really just preoccupations of what we do during the day. But someone, it's interesting, you know, Yaakov and Yosef have a lot of similarities, and one of them, both their rise and their troubles come through dreams. You know, Yaakov dreams of the ladder, you know, and Yosef's dreams get him to fame. So the rule is, whoever interprets the dream, like the power of that dream is in their mouth. So if you have a dream, you always tell it over to a friend, so they'll interpret it favorably. Gemara gives an example of a guy who went and got 24 different interpretations. Neither one contradicted the other, so they all came true. Okay, and it gives another example with a couple of great rabbis that this guy had a dream, and one interpreted it well, and one didn't, and what happened. But okay, back, this is very mystical stuff. It's like, it's really prophecy. But the dreams go after the interpretation of the mouth. So Yosef told the dreams over to his brothers because they're my brothers. Okay, they're my brothers, and they'll interpret it favorably, and that's how the dream will come out. So, the Baal Turim's at work again with his gematrias, and the words, kasher patar, as he interpreted, chapter 41, verse 13, as he interpreted, is of course the numerical value of shachalamais holchim achar apeh, which is the exact wording of the Gemara, that dreams go after the mouth, after the interpretation of the mouth. It even works in gematria, says the Baal Turim. That's what he was doing in his spare time when he wasn't doing the four huge volumes of Shulchan Aruch, of the Code of Jewish Law. Okay. Next chapter, I did that. Okay. And by the way, who mentioned this? You did. Here's chapter 42, verse 9, Ramban Nachmanides' comments. I'm going to read your sensitivity. It says that Yosef, it says specifically in this verse, 42:9, Yosef remembered his dreams. Vayisko Yosef es chalomois. Lekayem hacholom hasheni. He had to make that second dream come true. Again, it's a prophecy. Veluleken, if it wasn't for this, haya Yosef chayte chet gadol. Yosef would be doing a tremendous sin. Letzar es aviv, to cause his father anguish. Aval es hakol asa yafe biito, but everything he did right at its time, lekayem hachalomos, to make sure the dreams came true. Okay. It says that this wealth, excuse me, the wealth, the years, the 7 years of abundance, and then followed by the 7 years of famine, is representative a lot what we go through. In our lives, there's times that we have, you know, good times, opportunities, tranquility to build up during those years of abundance, if you will, with mitzvahs, learning. And to that degree that we do it, that's the degree we'll be sustained in times that we're faced with various trials in life, equal to 7 years of famine. Okay? Whatever spiritual strength we attain during those 7 years, whatever it is, your years of tranquility, that is the spiritual support that we'll have during to overcome the trials of the hour. That's Rabbi Yehuda Sogol, Zeb Sogol. Okay. The Brothers, chapter 42, verse 21. Continually, you see this Jewish outlook. The Jewish outlook is that when something happens to you is not to say, oh, wow, what bad luck. Oh, this guy is nuts, this tyrant. Why is he accusing us of being spies? No. The Jewish outlook is to continue to say, what is that? You know, they keep saying like, Ma zois asa lukim lanu. Verse 28. What is this that God has done to us? Obviously, this came from God. Obviously, there's a message here. And the message to us is when things happen in our lives, we're supposed to stop at least for a second. Maybe we can't figure it out, but at least realize there's no such thing as a coincidence or bad luck. You know, why is this happening to us? It could be just a test, could be for other reasons, whatever it is. But at least recognize, you know, stop and think. Don't go blindly through this world when things happen to you. Stop and think, why is this happening? So obviously Hashem is talking to me. Okay? All right. So, but they go on to say, Aval Ashamnim Anachnu. Says, and say, we are guilty. Now, it's interesting. These words are very similar to the words of Vidui, of a confession on Yom Kippur that we say, you know, Aval Anachnu Chatanu. But we sinned. And what's the common denominator, the Tzad Sheva between these two, is Aval. Okay? Aval means but. In other words, it's true I sinned, but, you know, I got an excuse. I can rationalize it. That's the word but that allows us to like slide by whatever we do wrong. Always maintain a facade of innocence, right, and virtue. And, you know, we tend to rationalize and find every excuse in the world for our behavior. In fact, they say one of the mitzvahs, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, love your fellow Jews yourself, is give them the same excuses that you give yourself. That's what you're supposed to do. So this aval is what, on their level, again, Yosef's brothers were guilty of. Yes, you know, we were guilty of selling Yosef, aval, but we thought he was usurping the kingship. Aval, we thought he was a roidef, whatever other reasons we have. The aval has to go, right? You just got to say we sinned and go. The aval is a loophole which allows us to commit sin and act self-righteously and say, you know, we wanted to do the right thing, but, no. Okay? So that's calm down in there. Okay. Okay. Chapter 40, chapter 43, verse 6. Chapter 43, verse 6. Vayomer Yisrael, lama roiseli lagid yishad lachem ach. Yaakov rebukes his sons. Why do you tell them? You know, they come back and say, you know, the guy won't let us back up unless we bring Benjamin. So Yaakov says, why did you tell him there was a Benjamin? Why did you tell him there was another son? So notice that he's called Yisrael here. Now, all the commentaries grapple when the name is Yaakov and the name is Yisrael. What's the difference? Now, Yisrael is always the elite name or a name to teach us something for future generations. And that's exactly what's happening here. He's called Yisrael here, Yaakov, as he's teaching us as being B'nai Yisrael. He's teaching us a lesson for all generations. This is by the Emek Dovar. That when we're forced to When we're forced to appear before Goyish rulers, right, don't offer more information than the question requires. Right? Unfortunately, we have to be that way sometimes, okay? So that was the lesson here. Moving right along. Okay, interesting. Chapter 43, verse 32, he uses the word Ivrim. We are Hebrews. Very interesting. You know, as a people of only 70 people, we have a distinct name already. We're already known, the Hebrews, okay? Already very prominent. And by the way, it was used in derogatory as far as the Egyptians were concerned because they they despised us because we represented morality, especially back then. And the Egyptians were steeped in immorality. So that walking billboard and walking conscience was very bothersome, especially back then. And the Egyptians were steeped in immorality. So that walking billboard and walking conscience was very bothersome to them. Okay. A lot of midah keneged midah. You know, if you're into that, measure for measure. Why this happens? Because this happens. It's throughout last week, this week's, next week's parshas, right? Yosef accuses them of being a theft. Accuses the brothers of theft, right? To atone for stealing Yosef. He tests their love for Benjamin, as we already mentioned, as a tshuva to see that there's no hatred for the other son of Rachel. And Yosef, again, throughout this whole year, is only trying, I gotta emphasize this over and over again, we're not dealing about petty brothers, we're interested in getting revenge. Emek Dovar says that Yosef was trying to create a parallel situation, right, where, you know, someone could be, one of the brothers carted off to slavery, Benjamin, and they would not allow it to happen. And of course, they pass that test. And by the way, Rambam, Maimonides, says, how do you know a person's done perfect tshuva? So he talks about a guy in an ordeal with the, opposite sex, whatever it is. He says if he's in the same place with the same woman, you know, the same passion, same energies, and he resists, then that, you know, he did a perfect tshuva. So it's interesting. That's what Yosef is doing. He's creating a parallel situation and see if they resist it this time. And they go more than just that step. And we're almost finished here, guys. Okay. Chapter 44, verse 16, when they find the goblet that's planted in Benjamin's sack. Yeah? So, Yehuda says, Ha'olokim matzas avon avdecha. God has found the sin of your servants. Again, you see this continuously, this line of thought. They see the Yad Hashem, the hand of God and everything. You know, they don't say, this is a, you know, paranoid ruler, we're being framed, it's not fair. No. God has found, we did some sin, we're not guilty of this. We did some sin, and God has found, you know, he decided to collect now on us, whatever it is, okay? But the idea here, we're going to see throughout this whole thing, the righteousness of the brothers, as they realize ancient thing, a microbilum, this thing is something just happening. They always see the hand of Hashem. They're always trying to figure out, why is Hashem bringing us into these various situations? Okay. I think, here's one more clip. What's this? Oh, yeah, this is very good. You'll like this. If not, just pretend you do. Okay. Two more things here. Yosef is a parable. He is, he's a mushel, actually. He's a parable for what us, Israel's all about. Right? His brothers plotted to kill him. He rises to fame in exile, despite the slander of Mrs. Potiphar. And in the end, everybody bows down to him, right? So this is very parallel to us. You know, our brothers, Esav, you know, always planning to kill us throughout our history of exile. And the favors we do to the goyim is usually forgotten, like Yosef the butler. But despite all this, we're going to triumph, right? Yosef suffers 13 years, but then he reigns for 80 years. And the Medrash mentions that's the longest reign in Tanakh. So, same thing. Our suffering will seem like, whatever, 13 years, when we look back at our goals and all the sorrows we went through. But, as it says, Shiramalas Vayinu Kicholmim, will be like dreamers. It's appropriate. Dreams. Dream. Yeah, we'll be like dreamers. Those few years of exile and in torment, which are real to us now, but compared to the eternity of supremacy, where everybody will recognize what we are, those will be just like a few years of a bad dream. Bad dream. Okay, final thought for today. It's right here. This is a beautiful thought. You gotta hear this. Chapter 41, verse 16. Imagine you're in jail for 12 years for nothing that you did. As a matter of fact, you did a Kiddush Hashem. You sanctified God's name, right? Mrs. Potiphar was trying to do this with you, and you refused, right? You refused to do it, so you think maybe you'd get rewarded. No. What happens? You end up in jail for 12 years. You could really question God, right? Yosef's the Baal Bitachon. He's the man of Bitachon, doesn't question HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Doesn't question HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not only that, so he spends 12 years in jail for absolutely no reason, makes no sense whatsoever, especially since he did what was right. Right? So what do you think? 12 years in jail, all of a sudden you see the hand of Hashem, you see obviously that you're given this gift to interpret dreams. Paul has a dream, no one can interpret it, they race you out of there, right? Right? And you're standing before Paul, and he says, I hear you can interpret dreams. Now, I don't know about you, but I know what I would have done, or at least be tempted to do. You betcha. Let's hear it, bub. Right? And, you know, this is obviously an agency of Hashem for me to, you know, get out of here. Because I know my dreams are nevuah, they're prophecy of me being a king, of me having rulership, so here it is. Right? No, what does Yosef say? His first words after 12 years of suffering, Biladai, it has nothing to do with me. It's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he's given me the ability. Very, very interesting. That is the supreme test. And we usually don't face such a supreme test. Usually, you know, give a good cheer, whatever it is, or whatever it is, people say to you, you know, nice job, whatever it is, and we just say, thank you. Baruch Hashem. Say Baruch Hashem, and then say thank you. That'd be nice. That's the lesson. Anything that we have, any talents, any abilities, any skills, Alles ist min d'Eibishter. Alles ist min d'Eibishter. It's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it says by Avraham Avinu, Vayamin b'Hashem, he believed in Hashem, and Hashem, and then it says that he counted it to Avraham as tzedakah. So I think it's a Chedush Yerim that says there, Avram Avinu thought, considered it tzedakah, that Hashem gave him the ability to believe. V'yamin v'Hashem, v'achshav lo tzedakah. The fact that you gave me the ability to believe in you, I consider that as if you gave me a tzedakah, that you gave me that ability. All right, so that's the bottom line we learned from Yosef. Bitachon, having trust. Realizing Yeshua Hashem Keref Ayin, the salvation of Hashem comes in the blink of an eye, whatever source we're in, whatever pit we're in for 12 years, right? Salvation can come overnight, and that, when it does, recognize and thank the one that brought you the salvation. A good Shabbos and a happy Hanukkah. Boy, everybody talks about 6 million Jews that were killed, and it's a tremendous Holocaust. However, you're right, 1 million Jews escaped miraculously. That it was a tremendous miracle, and people forget to focus on that. So that's calm down in there. Okay. Now, guys, you got to learn, you know, when I shut this recording, I'm going to ask a question. That means I'm in trouble. I'm trying to find the next paper clip. You're supposed to ask questions so I can buy some time. Thank you very much. Parsha ends off with a very significant verse. Whereas when they first come down to dwell as dwellers, a ger, a sojourner, the Parsha ends, listen to the verse, by Yeshev, as opposed to, you know, a ger, a temporary sojourner in exile, you know, this isn't home. No, by the end of the Parsha, the last verse, by Yeshev Yisrael Beretz Mitzrayim, they dwelled in the land. They were settled in there. The assimilation started, in other words. And what? And the Yachazuba, and the land grasped them. It got a hold of them and settled there. So that is very significant. And this being the first exile, I wanted to open up with a little bit of a story. This is a story that's in the Gemara Baba Basra. Rabba Bar Chama tells how they were traveling on a boat. And they were in an ocean, a stormy sea. And what do they see? They see what turns out to be the back of a huge fish that's sticking out of the water. So much so that sand accumulated on its back, and they thought it was land. So they thought, it being an island, they anchor there, they got out, they started to cook, and they started to bake. And then, when it got too hot for the fish, it turned over. And they were scattered in the water. If it wasn't for the fact that the boat was nearby, they would have drowned. That's the Gemara. Very cryptic. The Maharshal, the first line of defense when it comes to Agadata, material of the Gemara, says, you know what this is? This is a metaphor for the children of Israel in exile. We're in the stormy sea of Golas, of exile, right? And what happens? We think we see an island, an oasis of security, be it Spain, Germany, Europe, America, call it what you will. We think it's an island, a peace, a tranquility for us. So we anchor, and we have bar mitzvahs and chasanas, and we have children and grandchildren, and we build houses, and we settle in, right? And we say, you know, this ain't Golas. This is the land of milk and honey. This is great. We're at home. And then it gets too hot for the fish, and it turns on us, and we're scattered back into the stormy sea of exile. We got to remember never to get complacent in the exile, that they can turn us. The golden age of Spain, the great Abarbanel was the finance minister. High government positions for the German Jews and in America, right? They turned on us in Spain, they turned on us in Germany. We got to realize, we hope it doesn't happen here. We hope this is an exception. But as good as it is, we have to remember this is exile, it's not home. That is reflected by the name that Moshe calls his son. When he's dwelling peacefully in Midian, he calls his son Gershom. A Gershom. True, I'm in peace and tranquility, but I'm a Gershom. I'm a stranger here. It's not home. Yosef calls his sons, remember? Ephraim and Manasseh, right? And he says, in the land of my suffering. Yosef calls it, remember we talked about this last week, the land of my suffering. And he's the viceroy of Egypt, extremely wealthy. He's bringing all the silver and gold of the world. Yet he recognizes, this is a land of my suffering. It isn't Israel. It isn't home. Right? And it's reflected in our Parsha, when we have the minion of the 70 people that are named, the 70 souls. Well, Levi's children are named. And Levi's children, Levi, remember the tribe that had no servitude in Egypt. But his fellow Jews were suffering. So he gave an education to his children. You know what that education was? He calls them Gershom, Kahat, Merari, Gershom, stranger, Kahat, like blunted teeth, Merari, bitter, Maror. I'm not in exile, but my fellow Jew is. I can't be at peace. And not only that, I'm going to call my children this so they'll remember to their children why they're called this. It should be an education for all time to realize that if you're a Jew in exile and everything's fine with you in America, but there's Jews in Russia suffering or on Iran or Israel someplace else, you can't be at peace. That's the message Levi gives his children, okay? And besides the fact, as we mentioned, exile, you can't get complacent. We'll stop and take questions. To climax this story, the last verse, when we first came down, as opposed to that last verse, we first came down, we said, Lagur ba'aretz banu. We came to be, well, you know, sojourners in the land, strangers. And by the end of this parsha, the assimilation already set in. By Yeshev, they were dwellers, and the land grasped them.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.